Welcome to the Rooted in Change podcast.
Hey everyone, my name is Jan and you're listening to the Rooted in Change podcast. This show features European clean tech champions and their solutions to tackle the climate crisis. Today's guest is Markus, the CEO of SolidWatts. Now, industrial heat is an important and constant topic on this show. Many processes need heat. And nowadays, that's often provided by fossil fuels. SolidWatts has chosen a different approach. They provide solid-state power amplifiers that deliver microwave and radio frequency power to heat materials through dielectric heating. And now that was a handful. We'll learn more about how this works in just a second. Welcome, Markus.
Hey, Jan. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. My first question to my guest is always, what's your background? What's your story? So tell me.
I am a mechanical engineer by training, then turned into a material scientist, turned into a researcher, more or less. I was at CERN, so the European Particle Physics Laboratory here in Geneva. And I've been there for probably too long. and so after this time, or during the end of this time, my co-founder and I, Jan, I met him actually at CERN. He's a physicist. He's the electronics guru. Mm-hmm. And we always had a couple of ideas of what we could do, because both of us stem from an entrepreneurial family. And we had always crazy ideas, stupid ideas. But then one came along, which wasn't actually so bad, our amplifiers. And then sort of a couple of things happened. We were both applying for into a company which we wanted to work for. Mm-hmm. And that didn't happen for neither of us. And this somehow triggered, right. Okay, we do SolidWatts. Right. And for me, I think I was in a point in my life where I think officially this is called the beginning of the midlife crisis.
Right.
And rather than changing wife, hair, and car, I was thinking, well, let's do something useful with your life instead of doing these stupid things. So this is how
it's interesting. You're the second in a row that says, you know, instead of fully embarking on the midlife crisis journey, I'm going to use that energy, or if you want to call it energy, I'm not sure, and embark on the entrepreneurial journey. I think it's a very useful use of that moment in time. Really interesting.
It is. I mean, I wouldn't change a thing in my life. I have a great life. All those choices I've made in the past brought me to here where I am today, and I'm happy. I have the best wife in the world and you know, kids, which are great, everything I want. So, I mean, like, why would you, you know, throw this away for a faster car?
Yeah, really good point. Okay, and then you mentioned already power amplifiers and SolidWatts. So
right.
For those listeners that don't really know power amplifiers and don't really know what you use them for, maybe let's start there. What's the problem that you solve? So, and then, you know, why SolidWatts?
Yeah, you hinted to it already. Industrial process heat is actually heat which is used in any manufacturing or transformation process in order to weld, glue, or whatever, do something with something and transform it to something else. And that is this is globally still 75% of this heat is produced by burning natural gas. This is crazy. And just to give you an idea about the amount, in Europe, this is the equivalent of running 100 nuclear power plants 24/7. This is Europe right. only. World right. is still a factor of 10 bigger. And so that is not good at all. And microwave heating, as you know from your microwave oven at home, is actually very, very efficient. And you take ideally clean electricity. You don't have emissions and whatsoever. And you can transform those processes of heating into something extremely clean, efficient, and fast. And it is being used in industry, but classically since 50 years. But the way we generated so far these microwaves and RF was tube-based. So tubes, what is that? You and I, we're old enough to remember audio amplifiers were tube-based back when we were young. And mm-hmm. and those you cannot buy anymore either. So there is a transition actually going on right. for transistors. And that's the same thing which is happening now with microwaves as well. This is the new normal. Tubes will die, is the end of life. And solid state is the new thing. And solid state means simply that you use a transistor for generating your RF and microwave power.
Okay. And what's then the invention that SolidWorks brings to the market? So now you explained the shift sort of from saying, okay, we identified the problem. Problem is industrial heat that's used in all, not all, that's used in many manufacturing processes and more or less industrial value creation. Super important. So that's not going to go away. So the issue that we're solving
it's getting worse, actually.
It's getting worse, right? With industrial value growth and production growing, we need more of this heat. So the issue that we're tackling is we're going to replace that heat that's produced by fossil fuels. And you explained the example with the nuclear power plants to just give an idea of the scale. So that's the heat that you're replacing. And instead of burning natural gas, you're going to use clean electricity to produce microwaves and radio frequencies. So what's then the invention that you bring to the market? Why did that not work before? Because that feels like a very smart approach to say, look, instead of burning something that's not clean, that's dirty, you're going to use something that inherently is a principle that we all know from our kitchen. So what was blocking the road, and what did you bring to the market?
Yeah, I don't want to take the credit for the smart decision, because we did actually something really dumb. We did the classic textbook mistake. I told you, Jan and I, we wanted to make a company, and then we had a couple of ideas.
Yeah.
And the idea was not to replace gas. The idea was, we know from our background, we know microwaves and high frequency stuff, and the generators CERN also uses.
Right.
So that is cool technology. So we fall in love with the solid state is cool, and so it's also textbook mistake of falling in love with the solution and trying to hunt down a problem to solve. Okay. So that dumb. Having said that, lucky for us, unlucky for the rest of the planet, Russia was then 2 months later invading Ukraine, and gas was on everybody's mind again. And this is where we luckily were a little bit awake and did something smart. Where is this gas actually used? And so, industrial process heat. Oh, well, we can do microwave heating with this. So this is the story of how this actually came to know. And the innovation, or the why this didn't go, why is it not so widely used as we think it should be? Again, is the old way of generating those microwaves. These tubes have limits. In terms of power you can reach and how you control them, and also efficiency and so on and so forth. But so these two, how you control them and the power they can generate, makes that for the heavy gas burners, so heavy industry, chemical, food, this is not enough. You don't get the power you need. We literally had an interview with a chemical potential customer of ours. They were saying, like, they were looking at our microwave heating in the 80s, 90s, and they just couldn't get enough oomph from the technology. Right. And so now, with the herald of this transistor technology and with everything digital, which goes with, because we generate the signal ourselves numerically, so we have total control over phase and amplitude and everything. Just all to say that these limits are gone now. Right. Having said that, what we try to do is really, we're not the first ones who make solid state generators or amplifiers. We're not that smart. But we are the first ones who try to apply this technology really in an industrial environment.
Right.
So industrial means really.
Where is the technology applied otherwise?
So the classic thing, and this was the beginning of the transistors, is telecommunications. So I think something, Don't cite me on that, but something between 1, 2, or 3G, mobile phones switch from tubes to transistors. And that was actually the beginning of the end of the tubes as well.
Right.
Now you still, so you find transistors now today. There are some plasma applications and some laser applications, and maybe some particle accelerator applications as well. But it's not really broadly used, because
it's not mainstream.
It is not. And it's because, for two reasons, people still have the notion of this being kind of a lab equipment, you know, fragile,
Right.
expensive, not easy. And because tubes are dumb, big and bulky, you know, you don't want to go to something fragile, of course, in an industrial setting. And this is something which we want to change. And that is where the innovation lays. We've built up from ground a new design using transistors, obviously, but a design which we can mass manufacture, which is extremely modular, which we can power combine up to megawatts. All this, you know, all the good stuff which you want from a thick ass generator in industrial settings, efficiency, ruggedness, all this we really put on the flag. So we reinvent the technology, if you want, for the industrial environment. And I think from our research, which we did, we are the first ones in the market who are trying to do that, and we have to capitalize on that.
Right. So let me paraphrase so to make sure that I got it right. So your invention is not sort of in the physical sense the principle that already existed and was known for quite some time, but what you really bring to the market is solid state now for industrial heat processes and moving away from, I think that you explained really well, you know, this idea of it's fragile, it's sensitive and so on, to being used in this industrial context where, so robust, modular, being able to scale, being able to meet the power needs that different companies have. So it's not sort of a one solution fits all, but rather due to the modular approach, you can say, look, we're going to provide you with the power that you need, but in the clean and sustainable way.
Absolutely. And a buzzword I try to keep, I try to put into every conversation is also that this is a platform technology, because as you just said, it doesn't really matter what kind of application it's supposed to be. It's agnostic to whatever comes behind. So whether you want to heat, you know, chicken or a chemical process or PVC, the generators shouldn't mind, and it doesn't. So again, the modularity is what allows us, and this agnosticism allows us to really mass manufacture those and bring the capex down.
Right.
So you summarized this very well. In a sentence, I would say, we use an emerging technology in a disruptive way.
Right. Oh, that's very punchy. I like that. And you just mentioned the applications. But you also said, look, the generators shouldn't mind where they're being used. I get that. But which industries are hungry for the technology? Because what we always see in our day-to-day work is, if you say, look, our market is basically everyone, that also means it's sort of no one, right? Because you need to... You need people to care about your tech, and you need people to understand the problem and sort of incentivize them to shift away from burning fossil fuels and moving away from the process that works right now. So sort of where do you think your approach will have the biggest impact in the near future? Or is there already customers that are using it and so on?
We have three customer personas. We categorize, you know, everybody into that. And now I'm actually sad that this is not a visual thing here, because I'm pretty proud that I normally use superheroes to represent those guys.
Right.
So you just have to imagine Batman now. Batman stands for technologically advanced companies who already use RF or microwave as part of their machinery. And they use old generators, these tube-based ones, and we just want to swap them out for new ones, hence making their machines not only better and cheaper to operate, but also future-proof. You know, as tubes die, they cannot buy them anymore, and if they want to keep on selling their machines, they have to switch over technology. We call them swappers. Then the next one is Captain America, the guy with the shield. So we call these are these massive big companies who thrive for bettering themselves and going away from gas. That is as simple as that. And they need help because they're looking for alternatives, and as a function of their process, it's not so straightforward actually to find electricity-based method. And so this is something which where a lot of money is, so the market is massive. But of course, it's also tricky, the kinds of BASF or other ones to convince that they need to change the process, meaning that they normally build plants which are optimized, you know, to the hair, and then they're operated for 20 years. So sales cycles will be long. But there are steps we can undertake, initial phase collaborations, partnerships, and then get into those more juicy processes when possible. And then the third persona is we have Flash. These are processes which are still in early stage of industrialization or still research processes, which potentially have a massive societal or environmental impact, such as CO2 capturing, mm-hmm. or PET recycling, green steel, these kind of things which have massive, massive upsides. And some of them only work with microwave heating, or many of them work actually much, much better with microwave heating. And so this is we call them the pioneers, and we want to help them to get off the track and really deploy their solution on a global scale.
Right. So I would assume then group 1 and 3 are the ones that are fastest to move, whereas then the second one is the biggest yet slightly slower to adopt your tech.
Absolutely. However, having said that, we have a very modular approach, but we are still also needing to develop the technology for going to very high power. Right. So as we grow in terms of technology and maturity, we can reach higher and higher powers. And so the first group, the swappers, is exclusively for now, I would say, the ones which could be commercially interesting for us. And that's why it is the quickest time to money and time to market, and we can help them the quickest. Having said that, the evolvers and the pioneers, they can be fast to some degree in terms of testing, and they have money, and these are really, if they decide to change, they have they hit hard.
Yep.
And the scale up potential is massive. So I would say, for now we do the bread and butter business with the swappers, and that's already a good company. If we manage to pull the numbers off, which we plan on doing, that's already a good company. But then the famous hockey stick is supposed to lay also in the other two groups, because they're, especially for the pioneers, the sky's the limit.
Right.
There's just so much gas you can replace. But if you dive into, and I know people have very divergent opinions about CO2 capturing and so, but if you look at the numbers and the business case which goes with and so on and so forth, there are big numbers. There are a lot of zeros there.
Yeah, that's a good way to phrase it. So you explained earlier how you sort of fell in love with the technology first and then found the solution, and then the solution came to you with Russia's war in Ukraine. How far have you come since then over the last 2.5 years? So what's sort of the progress that you made? You explain well how you route to market and the quickest way to money and traction. So what does that look like right now?
Yeah, I think the biggest achievement is that we managed to gather a team which is outstanding in terms of technology, but also a recent hire is bringing a lot of sales expertise and energy and momentum into the team, and we are 10 now. So that is all the work we do is thanks to them. We're a electronics company, and I'm a mechanical guy, so I'm next to useless. So that's all the team. And the team managed to bring our technology development to a point where we can actually have our first 10 kilowatt unit. So 10 kilowatt is 10 times your microwave oven at home. And you have to imagine this we plan on making server racks full of those things. So you have a rack insert, these 19 inch things. And this one is our 8.0 Lego block. This is the one which we will build the
most. That will be the building block for everything else.
Exactly. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then you only need a communication unit, some power combiners, and so on and so forth, a matching network. But this one is the one which also then, oh, you want 500 kilowatt? Here, have 50 of those. Oh, you want 20? Here, have 2 of those.
Right.
So this is really the block which we're optimizing the most. And so we're now at the state where we have demonstrated a proper prototype. We're having a even a production grade unit almost there. So this is really ready to be kicked off, and we are about to sign a purchase order as well. So we have a couple of POCs, of proof of concepts, with corporates for heating their material. We have very good conversations about swappers and somehow engaging them, having field tested a couple of our units already with a lower power. So people are happy. And we have validated a couple of hypotheses about the market.
Yep.
So I would
which
say
is super important at this stage, right? Yeah, so you don't repeat that mistake that you know, in the early stages, falling in love with the technology. I think that happens, but I think the issue is then if you don't realize that and continue to develop a product that the market doesn't want or doesn't want in that way. I think that's super important to actually then go out, test early to make sure that the product that you're working on really solves the market, that there's a demand for it, because otherwise the limits for the company will kick in relatively soon. It's not going to be a successful business.
It definitely is important, but still you're talking to a technical guy who you know, who manages to forget this at times.
And that's why I'm
more
trying
often
to remind you also on this show.
Fair enough. No, but I agree. I mean, it actually, this is my mantra, so it helps me that, you know, what we think we know are all hypotheses, and as long as we don't hear it from a client, you know, spelled out five times, it's still a hypothesis. And so it really does help me thinking in that way. However, you know, like in a day-to-day basis, you tend to forget that too.
Yeah. I guess that's the reality for everyone, you know, sort of the big vision and the big mantras are harder to remember in the day-to-day operations of the nitty-gritty work.
You're absolutely right. This is a very dangerous thing, right? If you walk along this path without, you know, thinking about where you go. Well, you obviously think about where you go because you have a technology roadmap and everything, but then this still means that you're still in love with the solution and not really looking at the problem. Because you need somebody to tell you that is really the problem I have, it's not enough that I think I know.
Yeah, and ideally it's not just that one customer or that one potential customer that says it. That might even be an outlier, sort of, you know, likes the technology, is a fan of you personally and so on. All that can happen. So ideally it's not, you know, more than one person that really then says, yep, let's go all in on this. That will help the company.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So you mentioned, you know, tech development and team build-up is the focus right now, and it seems like the commercial interest is also ramping up there. So that's a super exciting pace.
Yes.
Turning that into the looking ahead. So what's going to come next? What's next for you? What are your big plans, ambitions? What do you also need to do in terms of actions?
So we have imminently, we have a funding round going on. So we are obviously not cash positive without sales. having said that, we're well underway. We're making an equity round now, supposed to be closing in February, March. So that's, of course, a big thing I personally need to work on a lot. But of course, as a company, the aim is still that we make a proper sale this year. And then get, for next year, get two or three swappers in the line. So that, because swappers, the beautiful thing with the swappers is that, I mean, they sell machines, right? And so once they decide that they want to go with our technology, with our generators, then they will sell their machines with our generators, which means that it's not reoccurring revenue, but it's reoccurring orders. And so, a handful of those guys, would already, you know, bring us to a point where we would be cash positive. So, and that is ideally happening in the next 2-3 years. And then we can, you know, take off from there into the spheres of evolvers and pioneers more easily.
Yeah.
But yeah, commercially, it's taking off, as you said. So we are putting things in place for production and everything, but we don't have a purchase order just yet.
Sure.
So that would be then the next big thing where we also, as a company, this is a new maturity phase. Mm-hmm. Right now we are some sort of teenagers, you know, playing around with their inventions and technologies. But as soon as we are as we need to deliver and especially also produce, that is a different game.
And then it gets really serious. And I think it's also then the phase for the company that sort of needs new skills and a whole new mindset almost, because you're moving away from that theoretical phase of being like a concept to, well, then actual production and then serious production at one point.
No, absolutely. And so I call this phase now where we are production initiation, because, I mean, we can think about the systems we use and the facilities we use and how we set up, you know, relationships with our partners and everything. So that's all great. But then, of course, you have to be able to pull the trigger as well. But this should last for maybe, say, a year or 1.5. And then we should be commercially or in terms of sales so much under pressure that we really have to, you know, then go into the growth phase, then really move. Because right now we have a couple of offices, we have a lab, and so on and so forth. We will have another space for manufacturing and assembly. But once we get into the, say, tens or hundreds of units a month, we need to go somewhere else. And then, you know, this also physically is a milestone.
Yep.
We will need a new building and get serious.
Yeah, and that, I think, is really what you just described, sort of that transition phase of teenage years to adult grown-up business, and not just then, you know, from a revenue perspective, and you out of a sudden see, well, look, we're cash flow positive. That's an amazing feeling. But then also everything that comes with it of building out the company. I think you just explained this well, just in terms of what it means for the physical workspaces, you know, having a larger office, having a sort of a real production facility, all of that is something that I find is so hard to imagine in the beginning of a startup when it's, you know, a concept, an idea. And then once you start realizing it, it materializes more and more and becomes so almost surreal and then very real in the process. So that's a really interesting phase.
This I think what you say is very true. And this just triggered another thought. This is how it feels from the inside, absolutely. But of course, your big thing is also to convey this to the outside, because you're in a catch-22 situation, right? if a swapper, for example, wants to commit to partner up with us, well, you know, they make the same machines for 50 years. They may be a well-established SME, and now they're betting on a startup. You know, 10 guys in their virtual garage.
Yes.
So you have to show that, okay, you're a credible partner, you can deliver, but you never did because never committed. Nobody committed so far. So you don't have references. And that's an extremely shitty situation. Because if you're like me, then you very often have the feeling that you're actually pretending. And that's not something I really like to do. So you're in a situation where you just play with open cards and say, look, you're our first guy. Yeah, we have worked together now for a year. You know what we are able to do. Now you just have to trust also that the next 5 months we know what to do, and then take it from there.
Yeah, I think that leap of faith is a really interesting one, right? And on this show, the majority of people I talk to are engineers, not surprisingly, in the climate tech space, because it needs a lot of engineering first. And I think this is really the difference compared to other startup realms. And, you know, when people come to us and say, look, we want to start a communications campaign, what's unique about you? I think it's exactly that we understand the engineering mindset and the difficulty that comes with it, because right now you're selling more or less a vision and you need to convince people to trust you and to trust that it will work out and to trust that the Lego building block that you're creating will be delivering on those promises and will be able to scale to scale. And interestingly enough, I think in, you know, fintech and consumer tech and B2C, you know, hyper growth, last mile delivery, quick commerce models and so on, it's not very different, but the because you're also selling a vision, right? You're selling a vision of how the future will look like. For if we're staying on the quick commerce example, and listeners of this show probably have heard this example before, but I found that so interesting that you're saying, my vision is that all deliveries should be at your home, at your doorstep within 10 minutes. That's the future that I want to paint, but I'm losing money on every order. That's such a non-engineering mindset for me, because that feels so wrong that you lose so much money per order. And yes, I know it's winner takes it all market. So hopefully in the long game that will plan out. You know, fast forward a few years, it didn't. But that's I think the really interesting part for climate tech companies, where I think they can still learn and grow, is really that mindset of being comfortable in selling the vision and being comfortable to say it is the future that we're painting here right now. And it will work out, and having that moving away from sort of from the security of engineering to always just talk about secure, sort of not the underlying hypothesis, but the realities. I think this is very engineering like to then be able to talk about something, whereas I guess business driven people do it the opposite way around. They present results before they actually have happened. So I think probably a mixture of those two would be helpful in the realms of climate tech as well.
I think, I mean, climate tech has something going for it. I mean, there are a lot of, dangerous paths to walk. There's a lot of greenwashing, and people are looking at this and with raised eyebrows. And then you have all, of course, this entire division of opinion about, climate change in general. So the public is not so easy. Yeah, everybody, I guess, wants a 10-minute delivery on your doorsteps. But I mean, reducing emissions, or green future, maybe the everybody has already an opinion about this, and they're more differentiated. Now, having said that, the good thing about green tech is that the message is relatively easy to convey, right? Okay,
That's
whether
true.
you believe it or not, the message is easy, and so the and it's not such a black and white thing. This recognition of maturity. Because I mean, despite me always being worried about, okay, this one or this first or second customer really triggers something. Yes, it does. But you can do things along the way to increase credibility and maturity level already. You can talk to people. You get recognition through startup competitions. You get investors. You get the business angels who fight your cause as well. And you get references through this, and this is, I think, how you can. I was recently told there are multiple valleys of death, but I think this is the valley of death right now. So this point before the first purchase, or the way you where you're almost there with a project, with a product, and then you go into the proper sales. So again, clean tech has this going for it, and the other thing which I like, but I'm not using it very often, is this: can we afford to fail? And clean tech clearly has an answer for this. Like, no, your 10 minutes delivery, yeah, okay, that's nice, but if it's not happening, nobody
Exactly.
dies. So failure is not an option, which, by the way, is a great book. Is a very strong message, but it's falling on years, which are very, I mean, people can be put off by that as well, because it's panic and everything. But the green tech is a beautiful space.
I agree. And at the same time, I think what you just said, failure is not an option. I think most people would buy into that message, and yet it's hard to forget about that on a day-to-day basis as well. So we were just touching that topic earlier as well, sort of, keeping the vision, sort of looking at the direction of the company, and yet we sometimes forget the realities. Don't fall in love with the solution, fall in love with the problem. And that's, I think, the same pattern there that people, I think most people, and if you ask corporates, can SolidWorks or is SolidWorks allowed to fail? And everyone say, no, there is a great solution. It's exactly what we need. Do they commit and do they order? No. And I think that's sort of the valley that we need to bridge, and that gap that we need to bridge to make sure that the likelihood of anything going wrong is lower, and I guess the speed to cross that gap accelerates. I think those are the two factors that
Beautiful.
are really important.
This just triggered another thought. Another good thing about green tech is actually that there, in this space, there are investors who share this vision, impact investors and proper ones, and so and so they Because the hypocritic thing, you know, in clean tech, when you're not the Article 9 impact fund, but other funds, is that, yeah, we're doing something great, but still, you know, we need to adhere to the standard multipliers of benefit and of win to the investors, which, you know, in a sense makes sense because it only works if there's money in there. But the fact that you have to present, you know, crazy numbers, or that, not crazy, but you have to present ambitious hockey stick numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, I see the justification. Again, I see where this is coming from. But as you said as well, well, did they commit? Well, did they do this? Well, yeah, well, they're... And so I think I have the impression this is changing as well. You know, as the public discussion is going on and the awareness is increasing, and this these investors more and more go towards raising funds which are dedicated to clean tech and green tech, this is getting better. And in that respect, I'm actually very happy that we are a hardware company in the green tech sector, and that we are not a software company in fintech.
I agree. And it's interesting looking even back at the last 2 years, which I think have not been the easiest in from a startup perspective. And if you look at the adjustments that big tech companies have made in terms of their personnel size, and then even going down now to fintech companies and so on, I think the climate in clean tech sector overall has been very resilient and growing, especially hardware companies have been doing relatively well compared, I guess, to the industry standard. So I think this is a good space to be in, not just because of the inherent mission of the sector, but also because it proves to be more resilient compared to the outliers, pumped up businesses with cheap money. And now that money has a higher price on it, things get difficult and business models are under pressure.
Absolutely. Plus, do you prefer living in a world where, you know, investment money goes to green tech or to internet startups? You know, that gives me a lot of hope for the future, because if macro trends like this exist and money flows are redirected in this direction, you know, that really means that this is becoming a priority and not just a quick buck. Quick bucks is good, but with a sustainable and good solution. And the change in mindset is really, I've spoken now to a couple of impact investors, and this is really, it is really different. I mean, again, I'm doing this for the first time, and I don't really have a massive experience, but over the last 2 years, I've met many investors, and I also feel that, this is changing. The mindset is changing, and the people are more looking for sustainable solutions in the real sense of the word.
Mm.
No, it doesn't really help if SolidWatts becomes a success in 5-6 years and is being sold to some random corporate who kills it and the technology goes south. The investors will have made their money.
Yep.
But, you know, there is no sustained impact. So what they are looking for now is not only to cash out in a good way for them, but also to make sure that there's a sustained impact. And so that mindset change is massive. That is crazy.
Yeah. Looking ahead now, because you just mentioned the long-term picture and also described the difficulties, I think, very well of, you know, worrying about the multiple potentially value of death. Yeah. So what is it that keeps you going? Because, you know, you mentioned your starting point at CERN and the how you stumbled across the problem. There could be easier ways, right? Like there could be a nice life at CERN with a I guess 9-to-5 job and, you know, enjoying other things outside of work and not having to worry about technology risks and scaling up a company and everything that comes with it. It's not an easy journey. So why did you choose that journey, and what is it that keeps you going on that path?
I think everything, if I look back, everything pointed in that direction already. As I said, I mean, I come from an entrepreneurial family over generations. My father had a company which my brother now took over, and I'm the black sheep who went away. So it's just somehow this was always in my blood. And I think and I just now, with a little push of the midlife crisis, I allowed it to come out. And so I'm actually very scared if sort of what fails, what am I going to do now? Because I think I cannot go back to a 9-5 job. Having said that, SolidWorks is not going to fail, so that's good. But also, I have surrounding people who are helping, to make this a success, and also helping me with my doubts and also. But really, to answer your question, I think this is a great journey. Already the experience, which I now have, officially SolidWorks exists for 2 years, but we have been at this for 3.5, almost more or less. Is amazing. I mean, I'm somebody who loves learning. And if you're like this, I'm not sure there is any work you can do which, gives you more buck for the bang, no, bang for the buck the other way around in terms of learning. Every day you learn, that's something. Yes, it's stressful. Yes, you have to deal with crisis. Yes. But on the process, I think honestly, between you and me, I think my marriage got actually better. That because I was trying to improve, the way I deal with people and leadership and all of this, and I think on the way I became a better father and a better husband, and that's just nice. And if you can put on top, a cause like the one which we are trying to convey is replacing gas, I don't need anything more
No, it's a
than
good
that for
package,
getting
huh?
on. Yeah, yeah.
It's an interesting observation that sort of I guess the entrepreneurial life, as you just described, makes you reflect a lot and allows you to learn a lot about yourself. And just that path is probably something that you don't get in other settings a lot. And just sort of it, then it's not just about the company that you're creating and the impact that you're after there, but as you described very beautifully, it's the growth in itself or for yourself as a person. And I think the way you just described it, to become a better father and a better husband, it's a really interesting reflection that entrepreneurs share, whereas then in corporate life might just be something that you don't reflect upon a lot.
And I think it simply stems from the responsibility. I mean, what responsibility can be bigger than being a father? Yeah, I get that, but we tend to, stumble into that because, physically or biologically, everybody could do that. Almost everybody. Sorry for those who can. But the thing is, I mean, you're in this position, or when you create a company, you have impact on the people around you, hopefully even on the wider circle. And that makes that you have impact on yourself because you have to be aware of many things, which you can totally dodge if you're in a corporate 9-to-5, as you said earlier. If you're turning a couple of cogs, every day, you can dodge this bullet entirely and go about your day. If you want to have a successful company, you really have to look into the mirror more often than you want to.
That's true. I think this is a wonderful note to end us on, and what an impactful one. So I'm very happy with today's conversation. Thank you so much, Marcus, for making the time. A pleasure to talk to you. Good luck with the funding round. Fingers crossed for that you find the right
Thanks, Dan.
investors supporting you on this really exciting journey that I'm looking forward to catching up with SolidWorks in a bit of time to see how the growth journey goes.
With pleasure, absolutely. Thanks for this nice interview as well. We totally went off topic and off rail, but
Not at all. I think we very much covered the whole journey. I think that's the really important part, I feel, that it's not just the tech. That's one part of it, but I'm really interested
right.
in the holistic picture. So I think this is exactly the kind of conversation that I want to chat. So I'm very happy.
I'm very happy about it as well. I like sharing, and you have great questions. So I'm very happy and open to share.
Thank
Thanks
you
for
so
having
much.
me.
All the best.